Good morning.
Good morning. It's Tuesday.
Okay, welcome, welcome to the What's the Temp podcast. We are so excited to host you here today. My name is Bettina, and I'm coming in hot.
And I'm Jen, and I need to check in so I don't check out.
Yes, it's Tuesday. And I would love, love, love for us to go into our temperature checks for today. And our temperature checks are spiritual temperatures. And, you know, life is happening. It's life is lifing for a lot of people around us. We have people being diagnosed with various diseases. There's so much happening in this, administration that's changing people's lives. People's livelihoods are being threatened. So there's so much happening. And I just think it's important for spiritual checks, because if we can be all right inside, we can make things all right for us on the outside. And people are carrying so much around that we just need to have more compassion just for the people that we encounter on a day-to-day. So how are you feeling today? What's your spiritual temperature check, Jen?
So I am on fire.
Really?
On fire, yeah. So I've been so excited to tell you this. Last night, I went to a gala in New York City.
Love it.
I know. So, and it was actually spiritual in nature. It was a Tibet House gala. Mm-hmm. And so it was a concert at Carnegie Hall followed by a gala. I know, a gala at, I don't actually remember where it was. It was like a couple blocks away. So it was a star-studded event. And I went all out. I got my nails done. I get my nails done like once a year. I did my hair, professional makeup. I had eyelashes.
Look at
it. It was
crazy.
I know. I called you.
Did you have a lip gloss?
Oh, yes. I hate wearing lip gloss. I love it. As soon as it went on, I was like, get this off my mouth. I feel like every time someone puts, because the person put it on me, obviously I don't even own anything like that. But as soon as she put it on, I went from feeling like Annie Lennox, like I had the coolest eye makeup, and I love my eyes. I actually, as I was saying that, because I feel like that's so like conceited, but I was remembering when you told me you love your legs.
Yeah, you know what? We're so hard on ourselves. We've got to love stuff about ourselves.
Embrace it. You have to pick something and just roll with it. So I picked eyes.
Yep.
If the fashion that I was born into was short hair and flat-chested and heavy eye makeup, so if I was born in the 80s, basically, I think I would have been a total rock star. But unfortunately, perfect. I was coming up in the era of Britney Spears, and that was a high bar, appearance-wise. But I think I could have been like an Annie Lennox type of sort of a moderately attractive short-haired woman.
You've got to send me pictures.
I know. I didn't really honestly take that many pictures, which is so funny. I'm not a big picture taker when it comes to pictures of myself. So we got a couple and I'll send them to you. But as soon as this makeup artist put lipstick on me, I right away was like, I feel like a drag queen. I just feel like I'm in drag now. I can't. I hate it. I don't like the color. I feel like already a little bit like a drag queen in a dress, so that just took it over the top for me. I was, get this off my mouth right away. I lasted about an hour with that. The earrings never went on.
Okay, and what kind of shoes were you wearing?
I knew you were going to ask that. So the shoes, I borrowed, of course, shoes from my friend, who the little Italian one who yells at me. So she knows how to put together an outfit because she's more traditionally feminine, and I don't have any notion of performative femininity at all. I don't know how to put together an outfit. So she dressed me up. She picked my bag and my shoes and my earrings. And I did the best I could with that. The shoes, they were heels. They were black strappy heels, but they were platform heels.
Okay.
So I could walk in them.
Okay, good.
I lasted in them about an hour. I had them off before we even got to Carnegie Hall.
Oh my gosh.
So I didn't wear them to Carnegie Hall or the gala. I just was like, I can't do this. This is uncomfortable. And then the earrings never even made it onto my ears. But I had the bag. I was actually rocking a Gucci bag, believe it or not.
Okay.
It was a little bag, like a crossbody.
But earrings compliment. Okay, was your hair up or down?
My hair was up. It was curly and up.
With no earrings.
I had earrings, but I can't wear the non-gold earrings because my ear blows up.
Me too.
So yeah, so I was wearing diamond earrings, just my simple. They're not that simple. Hersha got them for me, but they're diamond earrings. And mm-hmm. I put those in. I meant to change because it was the year of the Wood Snake Gala. So she actually gave me these snake earrings. And I was like, oh my God, this is so perfect. But I just couldn't commit because they were heavy and they were making my ear hurt. And I just, I don't like to be uncomfortable. Funny. So the earrings went out the window and the shoes went out the window. I'm not that invested in my personal appearance, I guess. So I went for comfort, but I had a really great time.
The music was
so good. Like I cried twice during this concert because the theme was just love, love, love.
Mm.
It was this sort of spiritual. Everybody there was really kind. Like everybody in the whole city, you know, when your vibe is going and you're warm and you're open to the world, people are just sort of gravitate towards you and you gravitate towards them.
Yes.
So right away, my fake eyelash started coming off in the car on the way to the city with my friend. And so I was like, oh my God. So I had to jump out, run into CVS, grab eyelash glue. And the first person helped me, the CVS employee was like, no, you don't want that. Yeah. She's like, you don't want that eyelash glue. I was like, give me the strongest one you have. This eyelash is coming off. And she picked me out an eyelash glue. And I really appreciated this because this was a girl who looked like she knew a thing or two about fake lashes. And this was my first, second fake eyelash experience. And then I got to the restaurant. So we had dinner reservations beforehand. And I went into the bathroom and this other beautiful woman came in and she stood over me and was like, here's how you do it. Here's what you do with the glue. And then one of the women from our party, you know when you're meeting new people and it's just like you just hit it off with someone right away. Like me and this woman made direct eye contact and we were just like, have we known each other our whole lives? And I just knew it right away when I met her. And you know how you can also tell when someone's interested in you? Like, you know, like they're feeling your vibe and you're energetically connected. And she followed me into the bathroom. I had just met her 5 minutes before. We hadn't even really spoken yet. And she followed me into the bathroom and she came in. And of course, I had done a number on my eye with this glue because you know the glue's black. This glue is black.
Gosh.
So I had already gotten it all over underneath my eye. My makeup was destroyed. This woman came in there and just picked this glue blob by blob out of my eyelashes. It was so intimate. I just felt like I was being surrounded with this kindness. And then at the actual benefit, just everybody was really feeling it. They were feeling the spiritual vibes, the love. Patti Smith was there. And she said something that I wrote down that I wanted to share with you.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like there was a very heavy Allen Ginsberg vibe. People really worshipped Allen Ginsberg there. So here's what she said, and I wrote it down so I could tell it to you today. She said, she was talking about children, and she said, we all begin that way, and may we find it in our hearts to return.
I love that.
Yeah. So I love that. There was this really beautiful woman named Allison Russell who sang this song called, I think it was Super Lover. Oh my God. Oh my God. Just the vibes, like the love vibes, because the majority of the people who were performers were people who were in their 20s in the 70s.
Wow.
And the 70s is my time. Everything mm-hmm. that I am the most drawn to in the whole world happened between 67 to 73. Three or four.
Mm-hmm.
Every music that I love, everything. I just love that era. So these were the people that are now retirees, but who were in their prime in that era. It was a really, really, really cool vibe. I had this dress that looked like robes. It was so cool.
Okay, so how would you quantify that the spectacularness of that evening into a temperature, a spiritual temp?
Like on fire, baby. On fire. I am
you're
high
on broil.
On life. Not broil. Broil feels like uncomfortable.
No, it has a negative connotation.
Yeah,
but
broil feels like too hot. Too hot. No, I'm just on fire. I'm high on life. My friend who I went with is one of the most generous hearted friends, one of those living out loud people like you who just, mm-hmm. you know, you could just feel her as a channel of love next to me. Like every time they would say love or mention love, she would just sigh. And she's just one of those people who she's just so open. It's just like the universe just flows through her. And she was the person who I had the honor of sharing the car ride with.
Wow.
I just love this person. The car ride back, it was just like we were discovering worlds in our conversation. But also, it is late. I am old as hell is what I realized.
Oh, yeah.
The gala didn't even start until after 10:30. I go to bed at 9.
Yeah.
I was like yawning the whole time. Like, I can't do this. Yeah. I am so old.
You needed a shot of espresso in the car.
I actually had two.
Wow.
Yeah, we stopped and got espresso because we were like, we're dying. We're so old.
I know that feeling. Actually, the dish, the reason I asked you for your address was because I got your dish that you wanted. But I got a better, like a higher quality one than the one that I have so that you can make it different designs all these different things. But when I think about that dish, it's actually, I think it's five individual little things that surround the center dish, but they all come out, they separate, right? And so what I'm thinking about the connections of that dish. And it's like this open heart connects to that open heart, and that open heart connects to this open heart.
And now I'll always think of it that way.
It all completes and it comes full circle. And even when there's a piece or two missing, you can fill it up with other parts that don't necessarily look like it.
Oh my God, stop. I can't wait to see this thing.
But it just, that's what I feel like from that night and from your experience and from your description of last night. So I'm just glad that you had that experience and that you got to experience so much love in such a beautiful atmosphere.
And I want to say one more thing about it. So when I was going, you know, getting my makeup done and stuff, because I never do that. I just wanted to treat myself. I was like, this is a once in a lifetime for me. I'll probably never go to another gala. But it's funny because you think, what's a gala? It feels like it's fancy. It sort of has this air of almost like being like above you. Like, who are these new fancy New York people going to be? And I thought it was going to be more low key than that just because it was sort of spiritual in nature and, you know, it's mm-hmm. a benefit. But it was one of those things where I think in the past, my tendency would have been to think that maybe I'm not good enough or I'm not attractive enough or I'm not rich enough or I'm not whatever enough to attend a gala. But actually, the way that I felt when I was there is when this woman who was such an incredible performer on stage, this woman, Alison Russell, I was telling you about, mm-hmm. who she just blew me away. Like, I cried during her song. I never cry like that at a concert. Mm-hmm. I said, you are such a life force. You made us all cry. Just keep doing what you're doing. I was like, you're such a light. And she was holding my hands and she's like, you are such a light.
You are.
And we were having this moment. But when she said, you're such a light, in my head, I was just thinking, right? We're both lights. We're both lights. Like, I don't think you're above me. I just think we're just both people in the world. It was just this feeling of everybody is the same. Mm-hmm. Just because you're a celebrity, just because Uma Thurman happened to be sitting at the table next to me, she just seemed like a regular small human as well.
Mm-hmm.
There was, you know, plenty of celebrities to go around, but nobody was above anybody else. It was really cool.
There wasn't that weird pretentiousness that's usually present at Hollywood events. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. I mean, I don't attend many Hollywood events, obviously.
I've been to a few, so I get it.
Well, I've been at places, like I went to LA one time, I went to go see my friend perform, and the number of celebrities that were there was insane. Justin Timberlake was there, but it was a small venue. It was called the Hotel Cafe, I think. Justin Timberlake was there with Cameron Diaz. They were dating at the time, so that's dating me, what year that was. and then Venus Williams was there. And then Rachel McAdams was there with, what's that guy's name? You know, the really hot, Ryan Gosling, the one mm-hmm. from The Notebook. So I had just seen The Notebook and I was like, now I'm living in The Notebook. Like, she was dating Ryan Gosling in The Notebook there. And they were making out by the motorcycle. And it was just every time I turned around, there was another celebrity. But they weren't mixing and mingling in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
In this, like, they were sort of like aware that people were trying to get at them. So there was a distance between us, you know? And in this event, it was just like, you know, everybody was just talking to each other, mingling. Like, it was just a real air of equality, and I loved it.
I'm thinking that because of the type of event that it was, and
For a cause.
They were able to, it was for a cause, and they were able to let down their walls and, you know, not necessarily come into that space and feel like there was something they needed to protect, which only contributed to that air of openness.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm glad you had that experience.
Me too. Thank you. So I'm just high on life today. Just floating on those love vibes. So tell me, what is your spiritual temperature?
My spiritual temperature is, I feel like I am heating up. And what that means for me is I've been in a lot of prayer because it's like, I think I mentioned this in last episode about how I was able to, from a different vantage point, see where my family is. And it just sent me into this season of prayer and, you know, consecration and things just to kind of just get quiet. So I've been really quiet for the last week. I've been really focused. I've just been going inside, if that makes sense. And so I feel that pressing in that way is just really helping me see things that I've just not been able to see in the past, even about myself. And it's so important for me taking this role of matriarch for my family. And I felt that I only had the capacity to do things for my family. But it's so funny with the extension of, you know, the rest of the world. Like, I see people that pray for the man that does the crosswalk for the kids at the school. They pray for politicians. I've never had the capacity to do that because I've always felt like my family was in such dire straits. Like, look, this is all I got, you know? But I'm in this place where I'm able to see other things with people in my immediate vicinity that are not related to me. And so then I'm able to approach their situations with open heart. So one of my friends was telling me about, you know, things that are going on with her son. And I said, I'm going to keep him in prayer. And then she said, well, while you're there, honey, pray for me. And then she was telling me about some things that's going on with her. And so I've been like earnestly, you know, having these people on my heart and calling their names out in prayer. So it's such a weird space. It feels almost like spiritual limbo, but I'm very, very clear that it's not that I just need to stay in this place for a while, because while I'm helping to work things out for my family and others by doing the best thing I can do for them, which is go to the Father on their behalf, you know, I'm also working things out on the inside of me, doors that have been locked inside of me, things that I couldn't see, things that were around me that I wasn't aware or ways that I've operated that I wasn't aware of. I'm able to now see it and deal with that thing so that, again, when I get to my next, I am ready. I'm not trying to get ready in the next space. I'm already prepared because I've dealt with coming out of survival mode. I've dealt with coming out of, you know, my own forms of captivity. And so mine is like a lower temp, but there's nothing bad about it. So I would say my temperature today as an oven temp would be a 275 degree temperature. And you know that is much lower than my personal temp. But it's that in a hopeful way.
Wow. I love when you do oven temp for some reason. I just love it. Just really paints me a picture of how you're doing. But I love that you're doing low and slow right now, because that's not what you were talking about last week. Is you just felt like you were grinding, but you were robotic. You were striving and achieving, but you were detached. Mm-hmm. So to hear that you're just settling into a state of introspection makes me really happy. And I love to hear you say that you're unlocking doors. I want to know more about that. What doors are in there that you're unlocking?
So it's like I feel like we keep talking about vantage points. And if you think about the movie Vantage Point, do you remember that movie?
I don't even watch movies. I hate them.
Okay, so back in the day, probably 15 years ago, I don't even remember, but there was an older movie about this international event where they were in some kind of, say it was a political event that was happening, and there was a terrorist, some terrorist activity at the scene of this convention or whatever, and they told the story from the different vantage points. So one person was standing on this corner, one person was above looking at that, one person was above looking at that, and you can only see things from your vantage point. And from your vantage point, this is what appears to be happening to you, this is who appears to be the culprit, and these appear to be the only circumstances involved. But there are so many different vantage points that you didn't have access to in the moment that prevented you from seeing the whole picture. I feel like at this gigantic age, I'm able to look back at my life and see things from a different vantage point and see how survival mode was able to get me to become a better mother than I had seen in the past, but it no longer serves me now. So it's something that I have to let go. And then in that letting go, one of my cousin always says, if people let go of their tale of woe, the reason a lot of people don't want to let go of their tale of woe is because they don't feel like they would have anything to talk about. And what it actually means is they don't know who they would be if they let go of that story. I'm in the place of the willingness to let go of survival so that I could really receive the principled life that I'm working towards. And so when I say unlocking doors, it's unlocking, like being willing to look at my life from other vantage points. So if you see that you had an abusive mother, have you ever taken the time to look at what caused her to be the way that she was? And can you have compassion for the little girl in her that was taken advantage of? And then in that space of compassion, can you possibly forgive? And then that forgiveness can open up other things for you, because then you can become the open-hearted person that I was talking about that you are, you know? And that open-heartedness draws other open hearts to you so that you don't have to rely on the possibly dead relationship of the abused mother. You could forgive and you could love from a distance, but you don't have to have a need for the love that that person is incapable of giving you. But God can grant you other open-hearted people that will love on you and that will give you the things that you never thought was possible.
So two thoughts. One, with the forgiveness piece, when you were saying you have to forgive your mother, I don't think you're going to be able to forgive yourself until you forgive your mother, genuinely.
I believe it.
It goes both ways. What goes out comes in. For me, I can completely relate to that. I lived my whole life as a victim. I was so overly identified with my sense of victimhood. So here's what happened. Just I'll get into it on another day. But when I was 18, my girlfriend cheated on me with my high school teacher. And my high school teacher was such a mentor. Like, I don't want to overstate how much of a mentor she was, but she was a safe harbor for me. She was someone where when I was struggling at school, I would go to her room and she would give me the hall pass so I could just get a break from life. And I trusted her. Why did I trust a teacher who was hanging out with 16-year-olds? I don't know. Weird. I was 17, 18. So I just thought, well, we're so cool. I don't know what I thought. I thought she's cool, we're cool. We all get it. We're all equal. But anyway, she was sleeping with my girlfriend at the time, and I lived the next, 15 years of my life carrying around that victim card, telling every single person I know, here's what happened to me. Wow. Me. And I was so miserable. I cried myself to sleep. This happened my senior year. I cried myself to sleep probably most days. I was in college. I was a walking zombie. I was so depressed.
Wow.
And it just destroyed me. It just destroyed me for years and years and years and years. And I just never realized what my part in it is, because how can a teenager have a part in her teacher violating her trust and her using her position of power inappropriately and the whole thing, you know? And then when I was older and I was able to say, okay, I didn't have a part in that, but guess what my part in it was? My taking that and basically labeling myself with it and using it to identify myself and to try to get, I guess, pity from other people by saying, this is what happened to me. I told everybody about it, everybody I met. And that's what I did with it. And yeah, that was my part in it. That was my actions. Nobody told me to identify and to just nestle into the thing that happened to me. I could have dealt with that differently. I don't blame myself for dealing with it the way I dealt with it because I didn't have any tools at the time. So I also do forgive myself. But I don't think you can truly practice forgiveness if it's only to him but not her, if it's only to her but not me. So, and I think that goes with everything. Like one of my other really big characteristics, because I am a Virgo, so I'm very picky, but I can also be very judgmental. And that goes towards me thinking I know what other people should do and how other people should behave.
Yeah.
Like whenever people would ask me what I would want my superpower to be, I would say, I want to be able to impose awareness upon people. How ridiculous is that?
Mm-hmm.
I thought, I know better. I know better than you. And that is judgmental. And then, of course, you know, I was judgmental of no one more so than myself. And it comes back at me 10 times as much because I'm the center of my own universe. I'm the protagonist, moi.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of the protagonist, moi? It's like, there's this podcast I listen to where she says the protagonist, moi. And I think moi is just because it's a pretentious word.
Yeah.
And then you refer to yourself in French because that's how pretentious you are.
Yes.
So I was the protagonist, moi. And it wasn't until I let go of judgment that I was able to let go of judging myself. And I don't judge myself anymore, but I had to also stop judging other people. You cannot have it both ways. So I'm completely with you. I'm so happy to hear that that's a place you're in because you've done a total about face since the last time I talked to you. You recognized that something wasn't working for you, that something wasn't serving you, and then you went to a different place internally. Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
I had to. I just feel like it's necessary. And I am so ready to tell a different story in this season. You know, I didn't feel like, it's so funny because, you know, as a person that does so much and works to achieve so much, I didn't feel like I was that person that didn't want to let go of the tale of woe, right? But being able to just sit and just let these things marinate, these new awarenesses and the things that I'm learning and the things that are just coming to me in revelation, as I sit in it and as I unpack it and, things cause me to research and things like that. As I start to research and look like, it always feels good to know that you're not the first one. You know what I mean? You always feel like, oh, this only happens to me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's good. But then to have a name for things or to have an understanding for how to travel through it instead of wallowing in it. And so that's really good for me. So this temperature I am excited about because what I understand about toxic cycles is if you try and get out of it too soon, if you don't sit in the emotion, if you apologize too fast, if you don't sit in the emotion and understand, okay, why do I keep making myself feel this way? What is it that causes me to keep getting back here? And I'm very aware that this action is going to cause this result, yet I'm stuck in this insane cycle that I can't seem to get out of. And so to break that, you have to feel the feelings. And in feeling the feelings, you have to see the sights. And when you see the sights, you see yourself. And when you see yourself, then you have to make the conscious decision to change or not to change. But anything you choose, it's your choice. But whichever you choose, you know, then you have a responsibility, in my opinion, to follow that path all the way out.
Yeah, you can't go around it. You have to go through it.
You have to go through it.
And so, once you see it, then it does become your responsibility. Like, I think when I was going around being a victim. Mm-hmm. I didn't see it. I was unhappy, and I was also very comfortable in a place of unhappiness. So I was comfortable being uncomfortable because that's all I ever knew. But then once I did see it, then it became my responsibility to change it. But I do want to return to something you said that I have a follow-up question on. You had said that you were realizing certain ways that being you wanted to parent differently, but then they were no longer serving you in this chapter. Can you explain what that meant?
So for me, all I knew was grind culture. Right. So if I had to work however long, however many hours, if I had to go to school and work at the same time, if I had to bust my butt to take all these, extra courses to get raises and do all these things to, be able to ask for a raise at the end of the quarter, that's what I was going to do. But what that did for me, like when the kids were growing up, there's not a lot I remember about their teenage years because I was too busy grinding to provide. This one is having prom. This one's going to be doing extracurricular activities. This one is really smart and needs to go to an additional school in addition to her high school, And so all those things come with a price tag. And so for me, all I could see was the price tag. And I always say that one of my regrets is not just relaxing in. So after the story that I told last week about missing time with my children, I came home with a feeling of needing to catch up. So I did. I never stopped. What I'm attributing my get it done-ness to, and I feel like there's a way to get it done and it not fall under survival mode.
Definitely.
I feel like there's a way to be productive. There's a way to achieve. There's a way to achieve at your highest levels where it's not from the standpoint of grind culture. I'd like to really, really, not just theoretically, but really, really let go of grind culture so that I can appreciate day-to-day life because, like we talked about, I do want to be married. And I don't want to have a relationship where I'm so busy achieving and aspiring and inspiring and doing all the things that I do that I don't make time to appreciate the day-to-day with my kingdom husband. So for me, I need to get this now. I talk about, mastering things in the hidden space while I'm hidden, while I don't even have a potential right now. But while these things are my life, I need to master this stuff so that I have room to accept another person that can, match my energy and can match my view of life. But I need to get clarity on all these things and make sure that there's space for that person. And so it's that, if that answers your question, is I need to let go of some things that I picked up that were healthy. Like grind culture was good because it allowed me to raise my kids without welfare. Grind culture is not good at this state when I need to be enjoying life more, still achieving at my highest levels, but enjoying the journey. It's not about destination, it's journey. And I know that theoretically, but I need to really, really understand that because that's the way that I live.
Something that one of the women that I was with last night, so I was there with my friend's sister and she had invited a bunch of people she knew. They were all from New Hope and they were all moms. They all had kids, but they didn't seem like moms because they were dressed up in like snake outfits at this gala. They were sort of alternative moms, but I asked them, what would you have done differently or what do you wish you had known when you were a younger mom? And one of them said, because she was definitely a grind culture type of person, and she said she just wishes that she would have slowed down and not been so hard on herself. And the example that she gave, and this is such a common struggle for moms, is pumping. A lot of women just don't produce enough breast milk for their babies. And then you get this feeling of failure or that you're falling short or that society or whoever is saying that you need to give your baby this breast milk or else they're not going to be okay or they're not going to be as well off if they did have breast milk. And this woman was just saying that she would pump, I think she said 8 times a day to come up with a half an ounce of breast milk per session. So it just wasn't working for her, a half ounce to an ounce, I think she said. And she was just killing herself over this pumping 8 times a day instead of enjoying her time with her baby. And she just wishes she could go back and have a do-over and just be kind to herself.
Mm-hmm.
And I can also relate to that because I'm also a nursing mother right now. And it, when you're not producing enough, you get this feeling of failure and this feeling. It's like, where are these judgments coming from? They're not coming from me. If it were me, I would just say, give the baby formula and keep it moving. But it's not me. It's like there's this expectation out there that I'm picking up on somehow that I've internalized without even realizing it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where, I guess it's just, this is sort of the messaging you're born into. None of us can really escape it. Just like how I think my body should look a certain way or be a certain shape, or I should have this feature or that feature, or, you know, it's, you can't completely escape the messaging of your society that you're born into. And then you have to just try to be true to yourself, but the message is inside your head. Like sometimes I feel like I'm receiving mixed signals, you know, like I'm not a grind culture person at all, but I still suffer from that feeling of being less than or being not enough or falling short. And
like there's something you have to strive for. And even with your body. So for me, I've recently lost about 15 pounds. And it's a big deal, but now I'm starting, and I see the difference. Like I was able to wear a pair of jeans on last week that I couldn't wear when I bought them, and with no muffin top. So I was able to wear the jeans, right? They looked really good, but then that made me start obsessing like, oh, if this area went in and that area went in and all this and that. And so what came to me this morning as I was lying here after I woke up was, I don't want to start obsessing over yet another thing. You know, when I'm all fluffy and frumpy, the last thing I'm thinking about is my body, because you feel helpless. You feel like there's nothing you can do about it right now because I got all these other things that take precedence over.
And you can't make it happen instantly. Like weight loss is one of those things where you're not going to see a change anytime soon. So you feel so trapped.
Yeah, so relax. But then the thing is, now that 15 pounds is gone, I notice it in my face, even my skin. And like I said, being able to wear those jeans and seeing a difference in my waist. And so then now I'm starting to say, oh, I look great in this. Oh, I look great in this. And that is exactly when I always stop doing the thing that's working for me. The second I start feeling cute, I feel like it's good enough, but then it's so easy to get back to where you just traveled from, right? And so I don't want to get OCD-ish. Remember we were having that conversation about holding on to something so tightly, and then it becomes that very thing that flees from you because you're trying to hold on to it so tightly. Yeah. So I don't want to start idolizing the physical temple, right? Because I'm taking my eye off the bigger prize, which is really, and weight loss wasn't even one of the things on my goal list this year, but it just came as a result of being disciplined in the other things that I'm supposed to be doing, right? And so I'm so glad that we're doing this so that I have someone that's listening to me and that's saying, this is so different from where you were last week. Last week, I mean, because it's one thing to be getting it done, but is the getting it done in a healthy way that's really helping you be a better person, like that's really helping you to be ready for what's coming after you finish all this stuff? Yeah. So I'm appreciative.
Accountability
for real. So I thank you. But let's go into our next portion, which I'm excited about. The question is, the backstory question is, how does faith shape your friendship?
So my friendship with you or my friendships with others?
In general. Just say friendships in general.
Faith is a strange word for me, as you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, belief. Say for you, belief.
Even belief, because I've never had a background in faith or belief. Probably part of why I've been so adrift
mm-hmm.
for most of my life. I think that what my life has been defined by until recently is actually a lack of faith in friendships. So there's been a change recently in how I feel, but the way that I used to feel is very, I didn't really have faith because of that aforementioned feeling of sort of being unlovable or not being enough or just having there be fundamentally something wrong with me. I never felt completely comfortable or a complete faith in anything, you know, because my center was destabilized mm-hmm. because I didn't have self-worth. So my idea of friendships was to basically try to impress is, I think, a lot of it.
Mm.
I was always very hung up on, you know, I am now curating your experience of me. Here's the things that I'm aiming to do here. I need you to think that I am the most intelligent, the funniest, the most compassionate, the best conversationalist. Every conversation we have has to be the best conversation of your life. Otherwise, I feel like I'm falling short.
Mm-hmm.
I hang my hat on that type of achievement and, in a worst case scenario, superiority. It's a defense mechanism. It's a form of armoring. But then when I was feeling really down, like let's say you were to call me when I was like couldn't get out of bed in a deep depression, I would avoid your phone call because mm-hmm. I don't trust that you will still love me if I'm not, you know, dancing around trying to impress you. So I would avoid you.
The dog and pony show.
Yes, because I am such a people pleaser that I need you to always see my best self, even if it's not my real self. And that's not to say that I didn't still have connections with people that were based on struggle, my struggle, shared struggle, their struggle. Of course, I've had that as well. But I think that there was a disconnect between what I was able to give because I was so concerned with me. I was so concerned. I was so self-centered and depressed. So I wasn't able to really be there for others. I wasn't able to serve others because what was I going to serve up? From my empty mm-hmm. cup. I changed that thinking recently. Not that recently, but a few years ago, where, you know, I felt so unworthy that if I were to text someone and they didn't text me back, I would think that it's because they don't like me.
Oh.
It couldn't ever be anything, you know, relating to maybe them having a busy life or maybe them just forgetting. It was always like I would just be so waiting. I just can't even, it's so foreign to me now that I would ever feel that way. Because now if someone doesn't text me, it's like, I forgot I even texted you. I don't feel right. that way anymore. But I did feel that way. So I remember this one person, I texted her and then right, like she was a new person I had met. And then I just right away was like, oh my God, I put too many exclamation points in that. That probably Aww. Seems really desperate. Yeah, I know. And just questioning everything about myself. And then this was the tipping point. I just decided to be honest with her. And I was like, oh, thank God you texted me back. Because I just went into like 10 different directions of insecurity about how I had too many exclamation points or I shouldn't have put the comma here. Or I shouldn't have added this. The text message was too long. And then she said, oh my God, that's exactly where my head was going right after I texted you. So we had this connection where it was like we both feel awkward trying to strike out a new friendship, you know? And then from that point on, I decided that I was going to treat my friendships as if they were my houseplants, meaning that they would not be any expectation that they would give anything in return. that I would basically approach them in the sense that I need to care for these relationships. I need to tend to these relationships, but it's a completely 100% outgoing circuit of my love to them. And I'm actually being intentional about this. So I'm not just saying, oh, this person seems to be showing some interest in me, so therefore I'm going to forge a relationship. No, I'm actually going to think about this and I'm going to be intentional. I'm going to say, who's lifting me up? Who can be discarded because they're draining? Who's really giving me life and who's shining light on me? And then I'm going to take responsibility for those friendships. And then if they do reciprocate, that's just the icing on the cake. It's not an expectation. It's not a quid pro quo. It's like, I'm going to put energy into this and I'm going to tend to this and care for this. And if they reciprocate, great. But it's really actually just about the feeling of loving and not being loved. The thing that I'm still working on is that because of this original feeling of less than, when I really like someone, which happens like not that often, to be completely honest with you, sometimes I'll meet someone where I'm like, because I have also a tendency to put people on pedestals. It's a pretty bad quality because, like I said last night, the best thing about that gala was that everybody was on equal footing. But I can also put people on pedestals. And when I meet someone who I really, really like, I just avoid them like the plague. That's when it activates my less than feeling and I feel like, oh my God, they're above me. I can't be normal around them. It's like almost like I have like a friend crush on them. And that's what I'm working on now is I'm working on trying to move towards people that intimidate me instead of taking the safe option and just to say, no, I am worthy of also being connected with that person. I don't know why I do that. Why do I put people on pedestals? It's a long, long, long running thing. And it makes me feel awkward and it makes me feel disconnected and it comes with all these bad feelings. But to wrap it up, I don't think I did have faith in the past that people would love me even if I was struggling. I never felt that feeling of an unconditional love. And I also, like I said before, with like the touch thing and with intimacy makes me pretty uncomfortable. Like one time my friend who's also my sponsor, she was talking to me and she put her hand on my hand. We were at lunch and she flipped her sunglasses up and she looked directly into my eyes and she said, I love you. And my feeling was like attack. Like I felt like she was attacking me.
Yeah.
And that sent me straight into therapy because I was like, okay, you have problems.
Yeah.
Because why is this intimacy with this person touching you combined with this deep eye contact combined with these words love? My whole system was like flooded and it was like a fight or flight feeling. And that to me, that's like you were saying earlier, when you see something like that in yourself, which is what am I seeing here? I'm seeing that I believe on some fundamental level that I am not worthy of love. That is not okay with me. That is not okay with me. So that's actually when I went into therapy to do that childhood work, which is what I was doing last year.
I love that you decided to work on it. That's beautiful, as opposed to seeing it and saying, closing the door like, I'm not dealing with that. You know, a lot of people do
that. Oh, my God, no.
A lot of people do it.
And I've done that. I've been guilty of that, but I don't want that for myself. I want to be a person who can not only tolerate intimacy, but can reciprocate intimacy, can give intimacy. And there's this one person I'm actually thinking of. She's actually my gynecologist randomly, but she is a really, I know. I like make friends with people wherever I go.
Most random people. It's hilarious.
It's not that random. I actually have a history. this department, which I'll talk to you about. I'll talk about another episode. It's such a weird thing. But she is she's a really, a truly exceptional healthcare provider. She's a truly exceptional human being. And she would hold my hands and look into my eyes. And I just felt so held and so loved. And it's like we're in a sterile office setting and you are making me feel so held. But she also made me feel really comfortable in being held because she was so comfortable holding.
Wow.
She would hold my hands. I think 2 minutes must have ticked by. And those 2 minutes would typically be an eternity for me if someone was touching me physically. But instead I was just like, let's stay here forever. You know? that's who I want to be. I want to be the type of person who can give love and to have there be an inherent assumption that other people need and want love, you know, mm-hmm. instead of the way that I am, which is like, what do I do here? Do I hug this person? Do I do this? Like, I'm not comfortable in the touch realm. So I never know what's the right thing to do. I'm not the type of person who can put their hand on someone's arm and feel comfortable doing so and feel comfortable that that is welcome. I feel like there's like an inherent feeling of fear that that might be rejected. I'm not yet, like how you were saying last week about your son gradually relax into you physically, into physical mm-hmm. touch. I'm trying to relax into being less scared and less alert and hyper aware of the physical touch. So all those things are things I want to bring into my friendship. And I think that shows with who I'm drawn to. Like the person last night who I was with is someone who, you know, she's just a really physical person. She's a really open-hearted person. She's a mm-hmm. just has the most generous heart. And that's who I prefer to spend my time with, people who are like that. So I'm sort of learning by surrounding myself with what I want, the qualities I want.
I think this open-hearted, Jen, I don't feel like the open-hearted part of you is new, but this no. person is going to be open to, you know, hugging, because I'm very much a hugger. That's another area where we're very opposite. I am very much a hugger.
Hugging is fine as long as it has an end point, you know?
Oh, like, because
we hug,
you're like,
then we
okay,
separate.
This only lasts 5 seconds. I can endure this.
Yeah, I can. No, I can hug. I can hug for a longer time. It's not hugging, because hugging, there's really strong boundaries around it. Like, we might hug, we might even squeeze,
but there's a way
then
to
gonna
hug.
Be an end point. It's not like we're sitting on the couch cuddling. Then I would be
right.
freaking out.
Okay, so for me, how faith shapes my friendships, it's just the belief that better is available or better is possible. For me, I would have to define faith, and biblically, there's a scripture, Hebrews 11:1, that says, "Now faith," meaning in the moment, "faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen." So faith is the thing that you hold on to when you don't have the thing really in your life. Mm-hmm. And so for me, my friendships have been the substitute family. So I had a saying always that what God didn't give me in family, he gave me in friends. So I'm not close to sisters. I'm close to my brothers, but I'm not close to my sisters. So I have girlfriends that have been for me like family. When my kids were, I was moving from Inglewood to Agoura Hills because I changed jobs, and it wasn't a lateral move. It was very much a promotion in my career. And I had a daughter that was a senior in high school, and she just went. She asked my friend, she was like, "Auntie Celeste, can I come and stay with you for my senior year? Because I cannot change schools right now. It's just too uncomfortable." And Celeste welcomed my daughter
senior
with open
year.
Arms. Yeah. Yeah. She welcomed my daughter with open arms, took her to make sure she had a ride to school every day. I tried to give her money to keep her hair done every 2 weeks and all that stuff. She was like, "Girl, I have to send my daughter. I'm going anyway. Don't worry about it." You know, like it was the best experience ever. So that to me was like God putting someone in my life. And she'd been my friend for years and years before that, since like, you know, for years. And so that was to me what God gave me as a friendship that was more like family than I'd ever had. So for me, friendships were the belief that I could, that what I was experiencing, that there was better. And sometimes it would be better people, but I noticed that the better I became, the more of the junk and the gunk that I shed of myself, then the better people that I started drawing to me. There's another great friend that I have who recently lost his home in the Palisades fire, and I pray for him every day. But he's just one of those people that came in like a flood. He just fell in love with me. I was actually applying for my Vistage group, and we just had the best conversation. And since then, we've had these amazing conversations. And he sparked in me just a desire to grow my business in a way that I'd never seen, like on the inside. You see it on the outside, and it looks like, yeah, one day I'd like to get there. This was someone that was actually laying out for me the blueprint. Right. And so, and then we became fast friends. And so, and still, he's a very, very much part of my life. I just love him, and I'm loved back. Like, all he tells me, you are light of my life. Like, you are my sunshine all the time.
Is he a mentor? Would you say he's a mentor to you or no?
He's definitely a mentor. He gives the best hugs. Like, when you walk up to him, he's showing all of his teeth for me. Like, he's showing all of his teeth. He's like 6'5", and he hugs me like I'm his youngest daughter, you know? And it feels like home. And so I feel like faith, me growing and the belief that there could be better for me, faith shaped these friendships. It allowed me to have these kinds of people in my life for the long haul. And then just being as much as you can, everywhere you can, being able to reciprocate that love, that presence, that support, you know? And that's what it's been for me, being on a person that I feel like sometimes a moving target. And what that means for me is I'm in this place today. You said it earlier about where I was last week compared to where I am this week, right? And that comes from introspection, reflection, and a determination to improve. And so I feel most of the time like a moving target, and it's almost impossible to hit a moving target. So that makes relationships for me hard. If someone is in my life, it has to be because they want to be. They really want to be here. And they really have to be able to accept all the different changes, all the different modifications, the consistent growth, the consistent achievement. And I feel like there are special people that can appreciate that. People that are living in whatever their form of what seems like mediocrity for me wouldn't be comfortable in my inner space. Does that, you know, because it's like, oh, she's doing too much. That's too much for me. You know, I have a friend that we used to, you know, we worked together for years. We used to have lunch together, and in our brokest times as single parents, we have shared what we call a pronto. We used to go to this place called Baja Fresh. I don't know if you remember Baja Fresh from California.
I've seen it, never been in it.
But we used to go to Baja Fresh for lunch. And one time we had like $4 between us to share a pronto. And a pronto was like guacamole and chips, right? we shared it. And it was so funny. We laughed at the end of the pronto. We were like, why do we come in here, get a whole entree and a pronto each when we could literally share a pronto and be satisfied? That's because we're greedy. Well, and so every time, even though I haven't worked for anyone else for over 10 years now. So whenever I was in Burbank, I would always stop to see her. Let's go to lunch. Well, after my book came out, she didn't want to do those lunch dates anymore. She was very uncomfortable with my life. So because I used to work for her company, I could still go and see the boss. And it was like a parade coming out of the office when I would come, because everybody remembers Crazy Bettina, right? And all my crazy stories.
You're pretty unforgettable.
And so, you know, I just have a love affair with all the people that work there. But she stopped wanting to go to lunch with me. And I'm like, what happened? And she was like, well, your life is so much bigger than mine. And can you imagine how much that hurt my feelings? Because I remember when we shared a pronto, and I'm that same girl. I've just been intentional about you know, improving my life and improving me as a person, you know? But that doesn't change how I feel about you. And so that, all of that movement, that consistent growth, that was too much for her to remain a friend. And that's heartbreaking. So I...
That is heartbreaking.
It's really heartbreaking.
As if you can't have friends that are different than you. But I guess that's probably just maybe... You know, she was telling you something's making her uncomfortable. So maybe that was just something she needed, to work through.
It was a her thing.
Because I would never have the levels of motivation you do. And I'm comfortable. Like, my job is getting really hard right now. And I'm like, how can I quit? Like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to work late. And it's just, we are not similar. I would never be like, also, how can I take a class and work? Like, we're just different that way. But I'm comfortable being different that way. You know?
Yeah.
So, but then again, also, I think sometimes... Your friends are also there because maybe with this woman, something was coming up for her, something that needed to be addressed, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's interesting. So that's, for me, how faith shapes my friendships, just the belief that there could be something more. And it doesn't matter your station in life or my station in life. If we connect heart to heart and there is a, you know, place for me and we have a mutual respect and care for each other, why not?
And mutually meeting each other's needs, you know?
Yeah. Why not?
Oh, you know what I also just want to add with faith and friendship? Mm-hmm. This is something I've really been struggling with. I have this one friend who I am so in love with her. I've known her since I was 18. We went to college together. I just adore her. She's this beautiful little fairy, and she says things to me that I'm thinking about for the rest of the year. I typically only see her once a year or less. But she has this communication style, which is that if I do reach out to her in between our meetings, she will not respond to me at all. She's one of those people that will just ghost you. And sometimes she'll just take forever to respond, and then she'll write me back something. So we almost have a sort of a letter correspondence, almost more so. Like, I'll send her, I'll just be like, I'm thinking about you, and then I'll send her what's going on with me. And then, you know, many, many months later, or maybe the next day, but then not again for a year, she'll respond. And I really struggle with having trust, or I guess we can say faith. We can use trust in substitute for faith in this in this context. Because I don't have that trust or that faith that she will get back to me, that brings up a lot of insecurities for me. And that's not a her problem. That's a me problem, because I'm just thinking about this woman who something, you sort of triggered something in her where she's like, I need to take a step back. So with me, I have a lot of experiences because I was super, super awkward in middle school. I had horrible cystic acne. And then I was also awkward. Like, I didn't know how to flirt, and I just felt ugly and unworthy. And, you know, none of my crushes were ever requited. Let's just put it that way. So I spent a lot of time waiting for people to call me back who were never going to call me back. And I think that sort of settled into my system in a way that cemented my sense of unworthiness at that time. And so even though I don't feel that she doesn't love me, in this season of my life, I don't feel that she doesn't love me. I know she does. I know that this is her communication style, but I can't tolerate that communication style because it makes me uncomfortable to be in a friendship with someone who I don't trust. Like, if your communication style is that, even, you know, the person I was with last night, I know I'm not going to hear from her right away. It might be a number of hours. It might be the next day. It might be a number of days. But I do know she's going to get back to me. I trust her, you know, and I don't need her to respond on any time frame. But then not responding at all, that hurts. So I don't know how to deal with that type of friendship because I still want her in my life. I still want to have these moments with her. Like, when we do get together, it's usually for an overnight, and then I'm snacking on the delicious morsels of that conversation for years.
Here's the thing. Remember when you came to California for my event in 2019?
Mm-hmm.
And remember I had hired Lisa Nichols to be the keynote speaker?
I'll never forget it, putting the check in the bank for your dream.
Yes. So she said something that day. She said about the cup overflowing. Do you remember that analogy?
No.
So the analogy for the cup overflowing, and for some reason, this reminds me of your friend. So she had the MC they had a cup and saucer, and she asked him to put like a quarter of water in that cup. And she asked the audience, is there enough water in this cup to share? And so for me, I was thinking, well, I could have a sip and my friend could have a sip. I could have a sip and my friend could have a sip. So yes. And she said, absolutely not. She had him fill it to the halfway mark. And she said, now, is this enough to share? And I'm thinking, well, heck, if I was willing to share my quarter of a cup, I certainly can share a half cup, because in my culture, if you have two nuts, you give one to someone else in need and you take the other one, right? And so she said, absolutely not. So then she had him fill it up to three quarters of the cup, ask the same question. And now people in the audience were agreeing with me. Mind you, I'm silent answering the questions. The audience is agreeing with me and they're like, yeah, for sure, I have enough to say. She said, absolutely not. She had him fill it up to the full, ask the same question. Everyone unanimously is like, yes, we have enough to share. I was willing to share at the quarter cup, by the way. So she said, absolutely not. And my eyes are big and I'm like sitting back in my chair like, you got to be kidding me, right? And then she had him put more water in the cup until it was overflowing in the saucer. And she said that everything inside this cup is for you. Everything in this saucer is what you have to share with others. So she said, inside this cup is your health. It's your income. It's your peace. It's your retirement fund. It's your vacation fund. It's your vacation home. It's all the things that you need to be comfortable in the one life that you were given. Everything that's in this saucer, you can feel free to give away at your heart's desire. And what's so crazy is the saucer didn't seem like much, but that's that point of abundance, that point of overflowing is exactly where you need to be able to offer anything to anyone else. And that landed with me so much. And so this friend that you're talking about that needs to steal away for the year, you have no idea what her other relationships are. You have no idea what her family, and I'm not saying you don't know, but she may have family stuff that's leaning on her. She may have work stuff or vision stuff, or there's so much. Remember, I was saying earlier in the episode about how so many people are carrying around so much that we have to have compassion for one another, that it's not until you get to that point of abundance that you have anything to give to anyone else, even the basics of love. And maybe that's all she can do. And it's up to you to understand that, respect that, and have compassion for her way of responding and reacting, because we don't know all of the circumstances that cause her to have to be this way.
If I was living according to my own aspirational values, and actually it's funny because she's the one who told me this story. She told me that I haven't seen this movie because, like I said, I'm not really that into movies, but it's called Adaptation. And she is actually the one who told me the story. Didn't I tell you this, where there was like a guy and his twin brother, and one is Nick Cage, and then the one's a successful screenwriter. Mm-hmm. And one's is not successful. And then the not successful one's always trying to take down the successful one. But the successful one's just always just happy and high on life and confident. And then the unsuccessful twin is like, you know, that woman that you were obsessed with in high school, you were so in love with her. She was laughing at you behind your back. And mm-hmm. and the successful one, he says, it doesn't matter, because all the joy that I had was in loving her. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter. And when I think about being in the act of loving without expecting anything in return, that's how I would like to be with yes. everybody. You know, like what you were saying earlier, where you're praying for the mailman or whatever. That sometimes I think that's the whole point of prayer, is it's to get yourself to stop thinking about yourself. It's like, mm-hmm. You know, I'm all I ever think about type of thing. You get out of that by praying for other people. But mm-hmm. what it is that it's touching something that's not healed in me. So mm-hmm. that's where I think it's interesting, because what do? You know, this is touching on something for me that's not healed. Do I move towards it? Can I be the person who just has, I mean, of course I am the outgoing love circuit, but what it is that I feel like there's a limit on how close we can be Mm-hmm. You know, and there is there's a communication limit because we can't speak that as often as I would like, but also it keeps me from initiating contact. I think if I felt more comfortable, I would initiate contact a lot more because I wouldn't feel like I was setting myself up for sending a message out that's not going to be responded to.
And it could be sometimes just send love, like if she comes to your mind, or if like in two days in a row, she's come to your thoughts and you say, I don't know what's going on, but I just thought I should love on you today.
Yeah, I do that. Yeah, I try to do that on my best days when I cannot be so trapped in my to-do list. If someone visits my head, I always think about that as a sign from whatever is out there, God, the universe, that it's like an action needs to follow. And so if I'm thinking about somebody, I will just stop and text them and say, hey, just thinking about you. I love you. And that's when I'm living my best life with friends, when I'm in the outgoing love circuit.
Yeah. I think this has been amazing. I want to jump into our recipes, and I'm going to give my recipe on a very, very light thing. Let's jump into our recipes for today, which is
your
Sunday
first
dinner.
Today. Sunday dinner.
I'm first.
Dinner. Yeah, you're
Sunday
first. But is it Sunday dinner favorite? Okay, hit me.
So for me, it's going to be smothered chicken, collard greens, and hot water cornbread.
Oh, give me that recipe right away.
So really quick, just to lay it down quickly. I like to smother my chicken, which means putting it in gravy. So I would season it with my go-to four, which is Lawry's seasoning, salt, garlic, pepper, Cajun seasoning, and black pepper. Season it really good, batter
garlic
it.
Garlic powder and black pepper.
Garlic powder.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would season it really good, batter it with flour, put it in a little bit of oil in the pan, in the pot. I usually use like a cast iron or like a Dutch oven, one of the Le Creuset pots, Dutch
those
ovens.
Are nice.
And I'll just brown the meat in that. And then I'll pull it out after it's browned on both sides.
Wait, what type of chicken is it? Did you say it's chicken
so
thighs?
So I can do, this last week I did legs and breasts. So I cut the breasts up in slices. So not thin slices, but they were like chunks, big chunks of breast meat. And so I browned it on both sides, pulled it out, put it on a paper towel to remove the excess oil. I cut up to make my gravy. I cut up celery, onion, and bell pepper, probably one stalk of celery, half an onion, half a bell pepper. That's the Trinity. Throw it into the oil. And then as they sweat and begin to, smell up the house and things like that, that's when I add the flour that I battered my chicken with. I add that to the bottom of the pan, and then I'm mixing in. I'm like letting that, the oil, the butter, the peppers and stuff, letting all that kind of come together. And then I add water. I cook mine with water because I season my, a lot of people use like chicken broth and all these things. I use water because I do season my gravy. So then in my gravy, now I make gravy multiple ways, but the way I made it this last week, and it was delicious. The way I made it last week, I, kind of made the, you add the flour, it's kind of dry in the pan. You add a little bit of water. If you, depending on how much you make, you can add more flour, add more water, but I wasn't making a lot because I haven't really been eating. And so, you mix that all up, and then I add some, just for this one that was simple, I added a half can of cream of mushroom soup.
You can never go wrong doing that. You never can.
Yes, I added a teaspoon of Better Than Bouillon chicken and a teaspoon of dry bouillon. And
you and your bouillon, it's like crazy.
Because I'm going to use it for everything. You're going to hear this again when it comes to the greens. And so and so that was it. You kind of put the chicken back in. You mix that up. It has, the gravy consistency. And I choose a thicker gravy. Put it back in. Put the lid on it. Stick it in the oven. My collard greens are washed, cut, cleaned. I washed them with vinegar. They're really? Washed, rinsed. Yes.
What type of vinegar? White vinegar?
So white vinegar. Mm-hmm. So they're washed, cut.
Why are you washing it with vinegar?
Because they come out of a garden. It's usually bugs.
Okay. That's how kale is too. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So washed, rinsed, drained. For my greens, I always use smoked meat. So I'll have a smoked turkey necks, smoked turkey legs, something like that to flavor it. So that's already boiled for like hours. So mm-hmm. there's like maybe just under half a pot of water in those, then the smoked meat. So I'm like cutting the greens, draining them, washing them, and putting them in the pot. Once I have all the greens in the pot, I like let them cook for like 30 minutes without seasoning at all. Then if my meat has bones, like if it's like a turkey leg, I pull the turkey leg out, remove the bones and the extra gristle, all the weird stuff, put the meat back in there, season my greens. My seasoning for my greens is so simple. I put a little bit of sugar. I put, because you know, greens, the collard greens are bitter. So mm-hmm. I put a little bit of sugar. I put some both beef and chicken bouillon, maybe depending on how much greens you're making. I usually make, you know, that big half of the stove pot I make, because I can eat greens with nothing else. I put that in there, and then I put a little bit of Cajun seasoning. That's the best flavor on greens ever, ever, ever. And the pot liquor, you could just drink the pot liquor and just live forever. So that's the greens. <Live forever. laughs> That's the greens. Of course, I make a pot of rice for my gravy to go with my chicken. But for the hot water cornbread, I literally boil some water in my bowl. I have just say a cup of cornmeal, a half cup of flour, some salt and some sugar, and I pour the hot water in there and mix it up. And in a cast iron skillet, I have some oil, and I'm just dolloping like patties in the oil. Oh, right?
Really?
And it's so good.
So they're like cornbread patties.
They're cornbread patties, wow. But they're fried instead of baked. And you're talking about good. Like, this is like the best. So you brown it on both sides, and you pull that out, put it on a paper towel. And literally, this is the Sunday dinner. And if I'm really feeling fancy, I'll make candied yams, but we're not going to go there. We'll save my amazing candied yams recipe for another day. But that's literally something I made last week. It's a Sunday dinner comfort food, and it's amazing. Mm. And you feel warm and fuzzy, and you're fed really well, and you're gonna pass out for at least an hour afterwards.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice.
So what do you have for your Sunday dinner favorite?
So you're never gonna guess this.
What?
I've been thinking about it all week because I was like, what will I say here? And then mm-hmm. I just decided I have to say the truth.
What?
The truth is, girl, it's takeout.
Okay.
Takeout. I can't do it. I don't like to cook on Sunday. I don't like it.
Okay.
So
I was not expecting that, but okay.
I know. So I've experimented with the Sunday food prep thing where you prep all your stuff for all your weeknight dinners and things like that, but I hate it because I'll just be spending hours on my feet in the kitchen prepping all this stuff. And then it's like by Wednesday, I'm cooking again, or I have to cook parts of the dinner every night anyway. So I don't like doing it. I want to spend my Sunday. Sunday is God's day. I, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not super religious. I just use it when I like to use it, but when I feel like it. But it's just a day of rest for me. And what I really like is not having to cook dinner on Monday, because Monday is like, I don't know what it is about Monday, but Monday's a tough day. Just every week it comes around, I can't find like the vibe that I need. Even if I'm vibing, I feel like the world's not reciprocating. Monday's a tough day energetically. And I don't want to cook on Monday either. When work gets done, I want to sit on the couch. I want to drink my cup of tea with my blanket. I don't want to be cleaning the kitchen. And you know, it takes me forever to do anything in the kitchen.
I know.
So for me, it's taken like double the time. So if I'm food prepping, it would take a normal person an hour. It'll take me two or three. If I'm doing a Monday night dinner, I'm not even sitting down after cleaning the kitchen till 8, 9 p.m. I just am such a slow mover.
Yeah.
So what I like doing is I'll get some Indian food and then I'll use that rice on Monday night. If I have like either if we do Chinese or Indian, I'll have that leftover rice. So on Monday night, I'll just whip up a quick fried rice, you know?
Okay.
What I also really like even more is when we get pizza on Sunday night. And then on Monday night, I'll just reheat the pizza in the toaster oven and I will make a simple Caesar salad, which is romaine, Ken's creamy Caesar. I'm not even getting fancy. I can make my own Caesar. I don't do it. And then I do croutons and I do freshly shaved Parmesan, the big Parmesan from Costco.
Yeah.
It's freaking delicious. And I just do like a little pizza. It's like this like thick Brooklyn, you know, New Jersey's got the bread. So it's like, it's a delicious meal, just the leftover Brooklyn pizza in the toaster oven. And I just do the pizza with the Caesar salad. And that's what I do. I like to just relax on Sunday. I don't want to cook. I'm not a like, oh, we make meatballs every Sunday. I wish, girl. I don't do it.
That's fair. But you know what? Saturday is that day for me. Saturday is my takeout day. I have zero desire to cook on Saturday.
I like to cook on Saturday. That's so interesting.
I never like to cook on Saturday. So Saturday was always the day that my kids got to pick whatever they want, make their own food. Whatever you want to do, you can do it on Sunday. And
really?
On Saturday. And then we would also, it was the day that we would go to multiple fast food restaurants because one wanted chicken, one wanted pizza, one wanted, so I was that mom on Saturday and I didn't even care.
Okay.
Because as long
that.
As I don't have to cook, I'm good with it. Or you guys go in there and make something on your own. Tonight is the night you cook.
So your Saturday is my Sunday.
Yeah. So, but on Sunday was like, you're coming in from church.
It's a family day.
And we've just had this amazing experience. Let me get down for y'all. And so I would also like the hard things I would do the day before. Like if I knew I wanted Sunday dinner and it was so simple to just do the greens on Saturday. Yeah. So all you have to do is the chicken, the rice, and the cornbread.
I get it. Yeah.
So, yeah. But thank you so much for joining us. Jen, I love you and I love what we do.
I do too, man. I really do. I really do.
Another great one. So look, we're going to use this opportunity to sign off. Be great on purpose, okay?
Have a great 24. We love you. Peace.
Bye. Can I tell you that?